97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
It was a beautiful day. Sun beat down. I had the radio on. I was driving.
Thanks for joining us on Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. Mark Cox in here along with Bo Matthews and Carl Middleman.
Pew, pew.
It is some beautiful weather right now. We need to enjoy it while it lasts.
I'll tell you what. I saw the story about Spire and the 400,000 homes and businesses that may not get service after December 13th.
Yeah.
And in the statement it says, if we have a cold winter, I'm like, they must be from Arizona.
We will have a cold winter.
Yeah, but not till probably February. December's not that cold here in the area.
Whatever. I grew up in Minnesota. It's cold. I was in the Costco dairy egg area yesterday. Mm-hmm. I was freezing my butt off. I'm like, and this is what winter's going to feel like. It's just a reminder.
I went camping last weekend up to Door County in Wisconsin.
Nice.
Don't know if you've ever been there. It's beautiful up there. It's on the peninsula north of Green Bay. Juts out into the lake, right? Like Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's beautiful. And there were a few homes for sale. But as you drive up the coast, there's these little homes. Some of them are little. Some of them are McMansions that have this beautiful view of the lake. It's just gorgeous. And I said to my wife, can you imagine? We're north of Green Bay. How freaking cold it's going to be here in January or February?
And we had
unbelievable.
We had a similar conversation of where to escape to
from
this country, and the idea of Canada came up, and I'm like,
it's cold up
there.
No, no, thinking Belize or somewhere like that, right?
At least an island, down in the Virgin Islands would be great. I'd be good with that. Which would be outdoors, and we could still do the show.
Yeah, couple of great stories coming up for you today here on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. One involves a fish. One involves a bear. Not the bear and the fish were not together, but two experiences, two run-ins with some very rare animals to see these days in person.
Unbelievable.
And they're great stories, so stay tuned for all that. We got that coming up for you.
Can we talk about your event where people might be able to get a t-shirt like you are wearing today, which is, to me, outstanding?
Well, thank you. I've got my Let's Go Brandon t-shirt on today. I appreciate that.
Do you make it in my size?
I'll check and see if they've got one of those. I'm sure they do.
Only schmedium.
I'm glad you mentioned that. So for my show, we're taking the morning show, the Mark Cox Morning Show, live to Chicken Ellie's down in Eureka.
I'm coming over.
Next Friday the 29th. So we're on from 5 until 9 a.m. They're going to be serving breakfast. We're kicking off our first responder spotlight that we do every November, where we honor the men and women who are firefighters and police officers. We recognize different agencies. We deliver food to some of them. We are going to do a raffle that I'll have more details on. Can probably announce it next weekend, in fact, on the show next weekend. But we're going to have a raffle to raise money for first responders through Responder Rescue.
Love that.
And, so we're going to have some of these T-shirts, the Let's Go Brandon T-shirts. We'll have some of my Mark Cox Morning Show T-shirts. And our friends at WhiskeyDickerson.com have partnered with us to print these up. And they're also going to have some of their great shirts. If you've never gone to their website, check it out sometime. If you love the Second Amendment and you love whiskey and you love guns and all that stuff, you will love WhiskeyDickerson.com. You'll find a shirt under that you want to have. They'll probably have some of them at Chicken Ellie's next week.
I'll tell you what, Chief Brown and Chief Wiegand out there in Eureka, they do a great job, and I'm sure they'll be stopping by. Actually,
yes, they will.
Before I heard about that broadcast, Chief Wiegand texted me and said, hey, by the way, Mark Cox is going to be out here. I'm like, okay, I'll get up early.
Well, thank you, Bo. We appreciate that. You will have to rise early.
We're on till 9. So.
Yeah, you can.
I have things to do. I have things to do as well, so it'll be early for me. Anyway,
he'll be out mowing grass before he comes over.
He does not do that on weekends.
No. Okay, that's right. He told us that.
I rarely mow the grass. That's the beauty of living in the woods. So, Halloween weekend follows that broadcast, and I just wanted to talk about Halloween costumes and. There's a line in the workplace. Now, I'm not a big guy. I'm not a big Halloween costume guy as an adult. As a kid, I was a hobo because it was my dad's old shirt,
mm-hmm.
you know, pillowcase, that kind of thing. Easy peasy.
I'll interject here, wear my orange jumpsuit that looks like a prison suit with a Hillary Clinton mask a couple years ago. So I have recently dressed up.
Now, that's kind of beautiful, actually.
I thought so. Thank you.
And but do you think you could wear that in 2021 in the workplace?
Probably not. That'd probably be frowned upon, even though I wasn't showing any skin.
So I'm not a prude.
Or a snowflake.
But there was a guy in our office that happened to wear what was reminiscent of a Hooters costume, but it said Droopers on his T-shirt, a half shirt, by the way. And it wasn't enough of a half. Mm-hmm. But I thought to myself, my goodness, in 2021, and about 5 years ago, we had a guy show up at where I was working, and he was in full camo with an AR in his hands. He literally walked in like he was a Navy SEAL or something, yeah. The headgear and all that.
Nice.
He was fired that day.
Really?
Absolutely.
Wow.
You can't carry a firearm into the workplace.
You got to ask first.
I mean, as a kid, I used to carry my, I carried my BB gun in for show and tell. That was a different year. That was a different decade.
That? No, I got a better story than that. When I was in sixth grade, we had to give an impromptu, we had to give a speech in an English class that was instructive. That was a historic, something you were interested in. My uncle brought back from World War II a P-38, right?
Right.
A Walther. And I asked permission to bring that gun in to show it to the class. The teacher went to the principal. The principal said, just have your mom make sure it's unloaded. Have your mom drop it off in a brown paper bag that morning in my office. And when it's time for your class, I'll walk it down there.
Wow.
Took the gun out, talked about the history of it, how our family came to own it, passed it around the classroom to let kids look at it while I was talking about it. Got an A on the assignment, by the way, as I remember. But this would have been 1975, 76,
sure.
Probably 76 or 77, somewhere in there. What a different world we live in these days.
In the era of you could have a gun rack in your pickup
I know,
and not be a problem.
Which many kids did in my high school.
Absolutely. Yeah. Ours too. And I wasn't even a country boy at that point. I lived on the edge of town, but I wasn't. I mean, I hung out with the country boys. But yeah, gun racks in your pickup truck, not strange. Carried my BB, it was my Daisy BB gun my dad gave to me when I was 7. And I didn't do the permission thing. I carried it to
took
school.
It to school.
Elementary school. Walked in. It was show and tell.
You could put
day.
Somebody's eye out with that, Bo.
And, you know, it almost happened. Somebody, my buddy grabbed it. Okay, this is weird. My buddy grabs it from me. We're on the basketball court of the apartment complex I lived in. He grabs it. Now, his brother is hiding behind the basketball backboard of the hoop. And he's popping up his head. And my buddy grabs the BB gun, points it at the backboard to, you know, like whack-a-mole kind of thing. He pops up. He shoots. It hits him 2 inches above his eye on his forehead.
Kids are dumb.
Yes, we were.
Had they not seen A Christmas Story?
I ran.
No, this was before 1983.
That's probably true.
Well, a little bit. But I ran home, hid that Daisy BB gun under my mattress.
Scared to death.
Yeah. And next thing I know, his mom was at the door saying, what the heck? And so that's when the trouble started.
I'll bet it did. I bet it did.
Yeah. I wasn't trained at that point. Thanks, Dad. He gave me the BB gun.
Did you write on your friend? Say, he did it.
Oh, of course.
Of course
it
you did.
Me.
Yeah, of course.
Lee Harvey Oswald said, hey, it wasn't me. But, you know, anyway.
It's the Russians.
yeah, that's what I should have said. Anyway, that is a true story, and it scared the death out of me. I just couldn't believe it happened. But anyway, so that's a bad gun story.
But the Indian, you're right. You can't do for Halloween. You got to watch yourself these days, right?
You do. My dad gave me the Daisy BB gun when my parents got divorced. I was 7. He goes, you have to protect the family. You're the man of the house.
Oh,
now.
Nice. There
well,
you
how's
go.
That for pressure?
No kidding.
Practice shooting in the basketball court of the apartment complex. Thanks, Dad. Good move.
yeah, no kidding.
Anyway,
great story. Hey, I tell you what, coming up. We all love the St. Louis Cardinals. I mean, there may be a Cubs fan or two out there, but we're going to work that into this as well. We're going to talk to Dalton Roach, the St. Louis Cards minor league player who had a pretty interesting interaction while he was out deer hunting on his family's property. Actually encountered a black bear, like maybe a 300-pound black bear. He's not even sure how big it was, but it climbed the tree and bit him. And you're going to hear him explain all of this as only he can in person as the guy that got bitten coming up in just a few minutes on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. We'll be right back.
Some folks say there ain't no bears in Arkansas. Some folks never seen a bear at all. And some folks say that bears go around eating babies raw. And some folks got a bear across the hall.
It is Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Is that Lyle Lovett?
It is Lyle Lovett.
He was my first celebrity interview of my career.
No kidding.
He was.
With the big hair and all that. I remember that guy.
Was he married to Julia Roberts at the time?
Not yet. And we were all shocked that he did go there.
No kidding.
But yeah, what a great artist, great guy. It is Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. This segment brought to you by Razorback Armory. You're looking for ammo. You're looking for something specific and custom made. Razorback Armory is where you want to go to. They're a gun concierge on Manchester Road in De Pere, just a half mile east of 270. Find out a whole bunch of great information about them at RazorbackArmory.com.
Yeah, speaking of bears, you know, I've been out west twice in the last 2 years, and I've probably been a little over-focused on bears. Is overly focused? Is that the word that we phrase
hyper-focused.
That? I was hyper-focused on bears. I made the mistake of going on YouTube, and I ended up down this rabbit hole of videos of bear attacks over the years, and I got a little paranoid. So it was a good excuse to go to my favorite gun store and buy a new gun, which was fantastic.
What was it, just, a 10 millimeter?
Yeah, I bought a 10 millimeter, a Glock 10 millimeter, Glock 20, 10 millimeter, just in case I saw a bear. And then I didn't see any bears, except from, you know, the car 100 yards away. So that's my bear story.
You hear the giggling in the background.
I do.
We actually talked to this guy on St. Louis Talks within an hour of the story break, and I thought, well, this is perfect for Second Amendment Radio, because we wanted to delve a little further into the story, because this guy was not carrying his brand new 10 millimeter like Mark Cox.
He was bow hunting.
Dalton Roach, St. Louis Cardinals minor league player, was actually out deer hunting with a bow and arrow. And welcome to Second Amendment Radio, sir. How are you again?
Good. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Buddy, you're getting some publicity about this. You thought you were going to get publicity for your baseball playing, and you will. Maybe now more attention will be on you, so it can't be a bad thing. But 15 minutes of fame right now. So describe, because I don't know if Mark's heard the whole story, describe what you were doing and the reason why you didn't get full video of the whole thing.
You know, like a normal hunt, just sitting in my tree stand, you know, been out there for a few hours already. So everything's going pretty normal. Had a couple deer, you know, come pretty much right under the stand as well. One actually was right under. But once they had left, probably 10, 15 minutes later, you know, I look out to my right because there's some crunching and I see the black bear. You know, like normal, black bears are not known to be super aggressive animals, so I wasn't really all too worried, even though, you know, he's working my direction. I figure, you know, once he smells me, once he notices I'm there, he's going to scurry away, just kind of on his own, because he was never on a path directly to me, at least not originally.
Not originally.
Because obviously, you know, I've hunted those woods for a good while now, so based on where we had trail cameras of, like, probably that bear specifically, you know, he had never come into that little inside corner of woods that I was sitting on. He's walked the trail that I'm tight to, but he hasn't popped into that section, at least where I was sitting. So I kind of figured, you know, I'm going to stay quiet for a while, let him just kind of mosey on his own way, and not disturb him, hoping he's not going to come up and disturb me.
So you just videotaped him, right?
Yeah. So right, you know, kind of right when I saw him, I started videotaping because it's the first time, and especially in those woods, that I've ever seen a black bear. So I figured, you know, it'd be a pretty cool video for my personal archive. Just, you know, experience that I have hunting. You know, just a little memory holder.
I love it. And so this is in Wisconsin, right, Dalton?
Yep, right in Wisconsin.
Where about in Wisconsin?
Trempealeau County.
Okay, which is, kind of put that in perspective for us in the state.
So it's just south of Eau Claire.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, so it's kind of that western area of Wisconsin. But yeah, so when he originally was coming in and he hit that main trail, it looked like he was going to stay out in front of me. then he made a left turn. Well, when he makes that left turn, he still wasn't facing me directly and was staying on a big main trail that we actually mow, you know, for us to get around. Yeah. And so my initial thought is, okay, he's going to just follow this trail like we have on camera. If he does, you know, hit these, he normally stays on them. And the wind was in my favor for the situation. It was coming from the bear to me. So as far as I figured, checking throughout the night, he shouldn't be getting great scent to me. Obviously, wind can swirl, and he must have smelled me at some point. But I figured, you know, he's still going to go on his own way. Obviously, then he turned again. And then once he got under the tree, you know, I started turning off the video.
I saw the video, and he gets under the tree, and he looks right up at you. And then I didn't see anything else, and I'm like, I wonder what happened next.
Yeah, and what's kind of wild is, like, right there, obviously that's when I stopped the video, but he never even truly looked straight at me. His nose was up, and he was smelling, but it's like he didn't even notice I was there.
But out of all the trees, he picks that one to climb. I mean, what are the chances of that?
Right, exactly. So it's one of those where, you know, in retrospect and everything, you know, probably could have made my presence known a little earlier, and maybe it would have gone completely different. But as far as I was concerned, is he wasn't showing any aggression. He wasn't showing that he knew for a fact that I was there. So I assume, okay, we're just going to let him do his own thing and keep on moving through.
Yeah, you know, do they have bear season in Wisconsin? We just started that in Missouri. They just opened up. I think they gave away 40 permits for bears in Missouri. Is that right? I think that's what it is.
Like that.
Do they have bear season up there?
Yeah, we do have a bear season, so might have to start looking into some tags for the future.
keep one in your pocket.
Right. Yeah, I know in the past, my dad, he's put in for the points for him and I, so I'm sure if we want to try to pull a tag, we got pretty good odds of getting one.
Yeah.
It's just not a style of hunting that we've done this far in our career.
Dalton Roach, our guest from the St. Louis Cardinals minor league, he's a pitcher. How big was this bear? Can you give us a scope of that?
So as he was on the tree next to me, he was bigger than I am. I mean, as kind of expected, but, you know, just talking to a couple people, guess is that he's approximately 250, maybe up to 300 pounds.
That's a big bear. That's a big bear.
Pretty sizable, especially when he's kind of next to you.
So, through this then once you realize that he's climbing the tree, because it had to make the tree shake, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, luckily it's a pretty big tree, so it's not like it was getting tippy or acting like it's going to break or anything. It's a pretty stable tree. But, you know, in a matter of less than a second, he was up and behind me. So, you know, even when he was on the ground, by the time I stopped the video, I didn't have really any time at that point to start moving and get his attention because, you know, as I was getting ready, he's behind me. And kind of his first thing he ends up doing, because now he's behind me, he obviously knows something weird is there and that would be me. His paw ended up placing on my hip. And so that's why at that moment I chose not to move very quickly or aggressively, because since he's got a paw on me, I don't want to freak him out and have him, you know, dig his paw into me or do something there, swing on me with the paw.
Did his nails get into you? Did they damage your hip at all? I mean, because he bit you, but...
Yeah, no, so when he put his paw there, he just set it there. I mean, very little amount of pressure or anything. It just kind of was like a resting spot for it. Wasn't trying to carve on me or anything. But I still, like I said, I didn't want to freak him out and make something happen.
Right.
And then obviously he started to move his paw off, and that's when he started biting onto my back. So I kind of, you know, feeling out the situation. I mean, now I've got a bear literally biting onto me.
Oh my God.
But it was kind of like a dog when it gets a new toy. You know, it's just kind of figuring out how hard is this thing? You know, they bite real slow. It was kind of a bite like that, just completely out of curiosity, not out of aggression. So then obviously I picked a point and I said, okay, that's enough, and stood up and tried to yell him out of the tree, which did work. He didn't get out of the tree extremely quickly, but he did eventually get to the bottom, and then I started to get a little more comfortable, but
yeah.
He didn't exactly just scurry off either.
Yeah, were you worried he might come back up? I mean, did at any point you think about pulling the bow back? I mean, I just have to wonder if that's the only weapon you had with you.
There was one moment, so yeah, actually, I don't think with many people I've gotten to this point of the story is, so he actually hung around my tree for another 30, 40 minutes.
Oh, wow. No, you were stuck.
Yeah, so I mean, it's at that point when he got out of the tree, I called a buddy of mine and just pretty much had him on call. Hey, I might probably going to have you drive out here. You know, you might have to drive up to the stand because, you know, I'm just had this bear up in the tree and now I'm yelling at him. And every couple, you know, 30 seconds, minute or two, I'm yelling at him, trying to continue to push him out. And he has no worry in the world about that anymore.
Okay, I've seen, Dalton, I have seen a lot of videos where people, you know, the big grizzly bears walking by and they're going, hey, bear, hey, bear. So do you believe the hey, bear thing really shoos him away or no?
I mean, I think it depends on the situation. You know, if I think it does, because obviously when he was in the tree and I stood up and made it very known that I didn't want him there, he did get out of the tree, but I think it depends on the bear's mood that day.
Yeah,
of if
that's
it's
true.
Actually gonna, yeah. If it's going to make them run away or if it's going to, you know, just kind of draw their attention some more. Based on how he was in the tree and after, I can't say for sure that when he was under my tree, if I'd have said something that wouldn't have brought him up my tree to look at me. There's no way to know at this point because obviously I did things a little differently. But yeah, so really the only moment I was potentially thinking about, okay, he might be coming back was a little while later. So I was still on the phone with my buddy because I need to just have somebody on the phone to hear everything that's going on and make sure that I'm kind of covered that way. But for a while, he never really left that 25, 30-yard circle of me. Mm. It was slowly just kind of meandering behind me again, and he did start working back at my tree looking at me. So at that point, I mean, I had my bow up. Once he got out of the tree, I was holding the bow the whole time.
I'm surprised. If it would have been me, I'll just be, you know, completely honest here. I would be screaming like probably a little schoolgirl. So that probably would have shooed him away. But that's just me. You're like a professional baseball player, so you're in a different ilk.
No, I mean, the thing is, I was still yelling at him. I mean, real loud, real aggressive. I mean, not really aggressive, but, you know, I'm yelling, making as much noise as I can, trying to shoo him away just with my voice. And honestly, he would kind of peek at me and then he'd go right back to the ground. He didn't really care how much I was yelling. If I was quiet or yelling, he just kind of reacted the same.
Well, by the time you make it up to the Cardinals, you'll have a lot of experience with the Cubs, right?
Oh!
No!
There it is.
Is that the first time you've heard that?
There's only been one other time. Somebody actually said, apparently, the Cubs are sending out a scout.
Nice. That's a better one. I should have used that one. That's a good one.
So let's talk about the injury, Dalton. What you described it as sort of a slow bite, but what did it do to your back?
So luckily, like I said, it was just kind of a slow bite there. Only a couple teeth made it through, so it was just two, maybe three punctures. So luckily, it wasn't, you know, a lot worse. Yeah, so it just kind of was a couple punctures like that. And, you know, in the moment, there wasn't tons of pain because I had so much adrenaline, I think, shock.
Sure.
As to what happened. But, you know, a while later, after you start calming down a little bit, and I was in my truck, I'm like, okay, this is kind of irritating me now. It had kind of just that irritation and swelling going on.
Wow.
Yeah, so, you know, first thing, once I'm back at the truck and on my way home, get a hold of my wife and make sure she kind of is updated on the situation. Yeah, so I was telling her, we figuring out, okay, do we got to go to the ER? What do we do? So she quick looks up, you know, what to do if you get bit by a bear.
Most people don't get a chance or a need to have that search done, right?
Right, exactly. So then we're kind of, and it was one where we were already kind of planning on going in just to get it checked anyway. But just making sure, because obviously I wasn't bleeding bad or anything. So it's just kind of what reason is really bringing us into the ER? Is it the fact that I got bit by a wild animal and there's lots of bacteria, or
sure,
does it have to be because it's painful and all that? So either way, we decided, you know, I better just go in. Why play that guessing game of what I should, I could have, and just get in and get it taken care of. And, you know, we get there, they clean it out a little bit, and then we figure out the whole rabies shot situation.
No. Ouch. So nothing lingering, nothing that's going to affect your baseball career, right?
No, not even a little bit.
Good,
I mean,
good.
The very next day, my wife, child, and buddy of mine, we went to the pumpkin patch and, you know, had fun there.
Yeah.
Then I was working out. So 2 days later, I was right back on my normal weightlifting routine and everything.
Good for you. Hey, are we going to ever see you playing at Busch Stadium? How's that career going?
Hey, that's the plan as of now.
Are you feeling good? Are you making the right steps to get there?
Yeah, you know, I think I'm making a lot of progress in the organization. Obviously, playing in Double-A is a big step.
Sure.
It's a very, like, key moment. So that was a great experience to have this last season. Learning a lot, you know, just with the coaches and, you know, from teammates and big leaguers that kind of rehab with us. You know, you can learn a lot from guys who have more experience than you do.
Sure. That's why I hang around Mark Cox here.
Yeah, being around guys like that was extremely helpful, you know, in facing super high caliber hitters and kind of figuring out, okay, what can I do against these guys and what pitches work, what seem not to, and just making adjustments. I have a lot of positivity going into the future. I think I'm starting to figure it out again, you know, after having 2020 season off, that was pretty difficult, but yeah, it was good to have baseball back, and we're definitely learning, trying to progress and get better as much we can.
Good for you, Dalton. And you've already got the media training side of it down. So when all the TV cameras are on you someday, you're already a pro at that. So great job.
Yeah, hopefully it's more in the baseball light, though.
Oh, I know. I get it. That, what an incredible story, young man. I'm just glad you're safe. And Dalton Roach, thanks for giving us a sample of what you went through and describing it so vividly. And we'll be watching for you in the St. Louis Cardinals organization.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you guys having me on.
You bet.
Go be a good dad, man. He's a new dad.
Yep, will do.
Congratulations. That's fantastic.
Cool name, too. Dalton Roach.
Love it. All right, Dalton, thank you. Hey, coming up, talk about, I mean, that's a one-in-a-million story.
Yeah.
We had another one-in-a-million story right out here in West Alton involving a fish and not a bear. We're going to get to that when we come back.
To the next story we've got on Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. By the way, this segment is brought to you by Chuck's Boots Superstores in Fenton and St. Peter's, and you can shop online at chucksboots.com. Maybe do some Christmas shopping, get ahead of it, but no shortages, no log jam of supplies and boots. When it comes to Chuck's Boots, they are stacked with over 100,000 pair hunting boots and hunting gear. Check them out, chucksboots.com. Tell them Bo sent you.
Yeah, we got a couple one in a million stories for you on Second Amendment Radio this weekend. And our next one involves not a bear, but a fish, which was pretty rare in and of itself. Chad Hester's on the phone with us, fisherman extraordinaire, I guess we call him these days. Chad, how are you?
How you doing? I'm doing good.
Yeah, doing well. So you caught this fish, which is a pretty rare fish. But before we get into the details of what it was, is this something that you're doing regularly these days, out fishing on the river there in West Alton?
I mean, I fish there occasionally. Yeah, it's one of my spots that I do like to fish. It's not necessarily the spot that I go to all the time. I fish pretty well everywhere, but definitely one that I hit every, you know, time and time again.
Yeah.
So are you a boat fisherman, or are you off the shore or off a bridge?
I do. I mean, I fish both off the boat and by bank, but 99% of my fishing usually occurs from the bank. I like to. It means more to me when you're crossing on banks and finding your own spots and fishing different holes, you know, boots on the ground kind of thing, versus getting in a boat and doing. I mean, I do enjoy catching them off a boat, no doubt.
Of course.
Just, it means more whenever you're, you know, kind of doing your own thing. And, yeah.
So, Chad, what are you normally fishing for? Carp or catfish, or what are you looking for?
That day I was targeting, you know, catfish. That's what I was going after that day. But
and it's not.
I'm thinking everything.
It's not so much about the size of this fish, although impressive. It wasn't like the 130 pounder from a year ago or two. I guess it's been now. That was caught in the area. Tell us about this particular fish and why it's so special and why it's called a one in a million fish.
Well, you see, you know, you've got a regular blue cat, which is what that 130 pounder was, which would be a dream of mine to catch as well. But then you have the genetic alteration of the pigment of the skin, where, you know, the fish can be albino. And then there's another category, which is the piebald, and which is even more rare to catch, I would say. I've been getting a lot of misconstrued people contact me saying, oh, you know, we catch them up here, we catch them out there. They're not a fish that you can go out and target species. You can't go out and fish for a piebald. It just, you can't do it. There's not enough of them in the rivers, not enough of them in the lakes. But I've been fishing that river, Missouri and the Mississippi, for 30 years. My dad's been fishing it for 40, 50 years. Yeah, you know, I've been fishing for 30-some years, and I've never caught one, and we've been fishing in rivers forever, and to catch one is just absolutely amazing. And then these guys are coming after me saying, oh, we catch them up here, you know. Yes, you can catch them everywhere. But the thing goes back to, not only did I catch a piebald, which is a rare fish to catch, but it also survived long enough to get to 36 pounds, which I called out a lot of people and asked them, you know, send me pictures, send me proof. If you caught one that's this big or bigger, I want to know, because I'm not like I need the record or anything, but it got this big, and I've never seen one. Looking on Google and stuff, you know, I have one guy in size. But think of this, the millions of people in the United States, and I've got one other person that claims they have one about the same size. But that is, to me, and to a lot of other people, you know, it is a one in a million catch.
Yeah, I would say so. So you've talked to the conservation department about this?
I did. I did talk to one agent out of St. Louis County, and he told me that he's never seen one that big either, but there's no record of a piebald, because genetically it's still a blue cat, so the record's still that guy with the 130-pounder.
No, this is a record. We need a new category, man. We're on your side.
Yeah, thank you.
That's what I said. That would be cool, no doubt. But I'm going to have a replica made of it, and unless I broke a 100-pound catfish off the bank, I don't think I'll ever break this fortunate fish, in my opinion.
And wow. We need to be clear. This is with a fishing rod and reel. This is not noodling, correct?
No, this is with a rod and reel.
Have you done the noodling thing?
No, I'm actually against that, only because the idea behind noodling is people putting their hands inside the nest of the fish and pulling them out of where they're spawning, and I'm just kind of against that.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. I've always been afraid, first of all, of sticking my hand back under a bank and a big old snapping turtle being in there instead.
Oh.
Yeah, that would be pretty wild.
that's not something I would look forward to. So, I guess my question is, normally when you're fishing for these, are you, if you're fishing for catfish, you're taking it home and eating it, correct?
Oh, yeah, some of them we do. Not all of them. We do release a lot of fish.
But yeah, there are some of them we, you know, we catch and keep, take back home and feed to family and friends. And I mean, catfish, you know, I love catfish. And I know a lot of people, you know, that I work with and my friends and stuff that also eat catfish. So yeah, every once in a while we will keep fish.
But not in this case.
No, no, no way. Not a million. For two reasons. One, it was amazing for me to be able to put my hands on that fish in the first place. And it would just be nice to, you know, I let it go for one big reason. It'd be nice to know that somebody else has the opportunity in the future to catch it when it's bigger. Yeah. And for two, I believe that a fish like that, if I was to keep that fish, I just got this thing in the back of my head, it would be like a bad omen to keep something like that because of its rarity. You know, you catch that, you keep it, take its life away, and you know, up around a corner bad would be waiting for you.
Okay, the capital. Hey, I gotta tell you, Chad, the capitalist in my heart says, should you have sold it to Bass Pro and Cabela's for their big tanks?
See, and that's another, a lot of people are asking me.
I'm just asking.
Even think about it. No, and that's a good point. Honestly, it is. I never thought about it. The second that I pulled that fish out of the water, I told my buddy, I said, we need to get this fish over there, weigh it, do what we need to do, take pictures, and then get it back in the water and videotape it. And all I cared about was making sure that fish stayed alive.
Good for you,
and
man.
And then like an hour later, the first guy that I talked to was, hey, you know, you probably could have sold that to Bass Pro or Cabela's. And I thought about it. I'm like, yeah, probably could have. But, you know, I'd still stick with my guns on letting it go. And that the conservation part of me was, I just rather have better odds of surviving out in the wild and maybe spreading its genetics and having some more.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. And plus you'd had to have a pretty big live well to keep it alive long enough to get it over there, right?
That ain't no doubt. And they've you know, you can look it up. They transported big fish that guys have tried to sell to Bass Pro Cabela's that died in transit.
Right.
And there ain't really a dollar amount you could put on that fish. The risk, you know, it dying, in my opinion.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give you a little hope. You caught the unicorn of fish, 36-pound piebald, and just the last time I was fishing my pond, I stocked it many years ago with catfish, and my line broke when I was reeling one in. It was not the size of yours, but it was a big catfish. The line broke, and my dad is standing right next to me. This is 3 years ago. He throws a line out in the water just randomly. He catches the exact same fish I had on my hook because there was my hook and the line
was still in it.
So in 10 minutes, we caught the same fish twice. So I'd say go back.
Yeah, no kidding. You might catch it again.
Yeah, that is true. Them catfish do migrate in them rivers, though. They move. Who knows? That fish could have been from anywhere. I mean, it could have traveled up from southern states. I mean, it's honestly hard telling, you know.
Well,
you never know.
If you do catch it again, immediately go to the convenience store and buy a lottery ticket.
That ain't no kidding either.
Good stuff. Chad Hester, great to talk to you, man. If you come up with another good story, another fish story, which, you know, our previous guest, Dalton Roach, both of these guys will be telling this story until they're in the grave.
I'm sure, absolutely.
I was at the nursing home, and at 90 years old, you'd be like, I was on the river, and I was fishing for catfish, and here's what happened. You're going to be doing that. You know that, Chad.
Oh, trust me. I know it. So does my family.
That's a great fish story. Chad Hester, thanks for your time today. Congratulations.
Hey, I appreciate it.
All right, you take care of yourself. We appreciate that. Yep. Good stuff.
Yep, good one.
What a good guy, man. What a good guy. You know,
karma, fisherman's karma.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Got to love a good fish story.
And he was afraid and he put it back and it still got great pictures of it. And he's going to get it mounted on his wall. That's fantastic.
So would you have tried to get it to Cabela's or Bass Pro?
I don't know that ever would have crossed my mind.
Yeah?
I just wouldn't have thought of that. I would have wondered if it was a record of some sort. I'd have been more likely to keep it hoping it was some sort of a record. He's clearly knowledgeable enough in that area to realize
sure.
It was still a blue cat and it didn't approach 100 pounds, so mm-hmm. It was no way it was going to be a record. So good for him. He made a good call.
It will be someday.
Yes.
So, yeah. A random thought, and I don't know the answer to it. Andy Griffith.
The fishing hole?
Where, no, not the song, mm-hmm. But the...
Where the cool grass grows.
Well, that is pertinent to the next story we've got on Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. By the way, this segment is brought to you by Chuck's Boots Superstores in Fenton and St. Peter's, and you can shop online at chucksboots.com. Maybe do some Christmas shopping, get ahead of it, but no shortages, no logjam of supplies and boots when it comes to Chuck's Boots. They are stacked with over 100,000 pair hunting boots and hunting gear. Check them out, chucksboots.com. Tell them Bo sent you.
Yeah, we got a couple one-in-a-million stories for you on Second Amendment Radio this weekend. And our next one involves not a bear, but a fish, which was pretty rare in and of itself. Chad Hester's on the phone with us, fisherman extraordinaire, I guess we call him these days. Chad, how are you?
How you doing? I'm doing good.
Yeah, doing well. So you caught this fish, which is a pretty rare fish, but before we get into the details of what it was, is this something that you're doing regularly these days, out fishing on the river there in West Alton?
I mean, I fish there occasionally. Yeah, it's one of my spots that I do like to fish. It's not necessarily the spot that I go to all the time. I fish pretty well everywhere, but definitely one that I hit every, you know, time and time again.
Yeah.
So are you a boat fisherman, or are you off the shore or off a bridge?
I do. I mean, I fish both off the boat and by bank, but 99% of my fishing usually occurs from the bank. I like to, it means more to me when you're crossing on banks and finding your own spots and fishing different holes, you know, boots on the ground kind of thing, versus getting in a boat and doing. I mean, I do enjoy catching them off a boat, no doubt.
Of course.
Just, it means more whenever you're, you know, kind of doing your own thing. And,
so, Chad, what are you normally fishing for? Carp or catfish, or what are you looking for?
That day I was targeting, you know, catfish. That's what I was going after that day. But
and it's not
just, I'm hanging everything.
It's not so much about the size of this fish, although impressive. It wasn't like the 130 pounder from a year ago or two, I guess it's been now, that was caught in the area. Tell us about this particular fish and why it's so special and why it's called a one in a million fish.
Well, you see that, you know, you've got a regular blue cat, which is what that 130 pounder was, which would be a dream of mine to catch as well. But then you have the genetic alteration of the pigment of the skin where, you know, the fish can be albino. And then there's another category, which is the piebald, and which is even more rare to catch, I would say. I've been getting a lot of misconstrued people contact me saying, oh, you know, we catch them up here, we catch them out there. They're not a fish that you can go out and target species. You can't go out and fish for a piebald. It just, you can't do it. There's not enough of them in the rivers, not enough of them in the lakes. But it, to me, I've been fishing that river, Missouri and the Mississippi, for 30 years. My dad's been fishing it for 40, 50 years. Yeah, you know, I've been fishing for 30-some years, and I've never caught one, and we've been fishing in rivers forever. And to catch one is just absolutely amazing. And then these guys are coming after me saying, oh, well, we catch them up here. You know, yes, you can catch them everywhere. But the thing goes back to, not only did I catch a piebald, which is a rare fish to catch, but also survived long enough to get to 36 pounds, which...
Yeah.
I called out a lot of people and asked them, you know, send me pictures, send me proof. If you caught one that's this big or bigger, I want to know. Because I'm not like I need the record or anything, but it got this big, and I've never seen one. Looking on Google and stuff, you know, I have one guy inside. But think of this, the millions of people in the United States, and I've got one other person that claims they have one about the same size. But that is, to me, and to a lot of other people, you know, it is a one in a million catch.
Yeah, I would say so. So you've talked to the conservation department about this?
I did. I did talk to one agent out of St. Louis County, and he told me that he's never seen one that big either. But there's no record of a piebald because genetically it's still a blue cat. So the record's still that guy with the 130 pounder, but.
No, this is a record. We need a new category, man. We're on your side.
Yeah, thank you.
That's what I said. That would be cool, no doubt. But I'm going to have a replica made of it, and I don't think, unless I broke a 100-pound catfish off the bank, I don't think I'll ever break this fortunate fish, in my opinion.
And wow. We need to be clear. This is with a fishing rod and reel. This is not noodling, correct?
No, this is with a rod and reel.
Have you done the noodling thing?
No, I'm actually against that, only because the idea behind noodling is people putting their hands inside the nest of the fish and pulling them out of where they're spawning. And
I'm just kind of against that.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. I've always been afraid, first of all, of sticking my hand back under a bank and a big old snapping turtle being in there instead.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah, that would be pretty wild. Yeah,
that's not something I would look forward to. So, I guess my question is, normally when you're fishing for these, if you're fishing for catfish, you're taking it home and eating it, correct?
Well, yeah, some of them we do. Not all of them. We do release a lot of fish. But, yeah, there are some of them we catch and keep, take back home, and feed to family and friends. And I mean, catfish, I love catfish. And I know a lot of people, that I work with and my friends and stuff that also eat catfish. Just, yeah, every once in a while we will keep fish.
But not in this case.
No way. Not a million. For two reasons. One, it was amazing for me to be able to put my hands on that fish in the first place. And it would just be nice to, I let it go for one big reason. It'd be nice to know that somebody else has the opportunity in the future to catch it when it's bigger. Mm-hmm. And for two, I believe that a fish like that, if I was to keep that fish, I just got this thing in the back of my head, it would be like a bad omen to keep something like that because of its rarity. You catch that, you keep it, take its life away, and something around a corner bad would be waiting for you.
Okay, hey, I got to tell you, Chad, the capitalist in my heart says, should you have sold it to Bass Pro and Cabela's for their big tanks?
See, and that's another, a lot of people are asking me.
I'm just asking.
Even think about it. No, and that's a good point, honestly, it is. I never thought about it. The second that I pulled that fish out of the water, I told my buddy, I said, we need to get this fish over there, weigh it, do what we need to do, take pictures, and then get it back in the water and videotape it. And all I cared about was making sure that fish stayed alive.
Good for you,
and
man.
And then like an hour later, the first guy that I talked to was, hey, you probably could have sold that to Bass Pro or Cabela's. And I thought about it. I'm like, yeah, probably could have. But, I'd still stick with my guns on letting it go. And that the conservation part of me was, I'd just rather have better odds of surviving out in the wild and maybe spreading its genetics and having some more.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. And plus you'd had to have a pretty big live well to keep it alive long enough to get it over there, right?
That ain't no doubt. And they've you can look it up. They transported big fish that guys have tried to sell to Bass Pro Cabela's that died in transit.
Right.
And there ain't really a dollar amount you could put on that fish. The risk, it dying, in my opinion.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give you a little hope. You caught the unicorn of fish, 36-pound piebald, and just the last time I was fishing my pond, I stocked it many years ago with catfish, and my line broke when I was reeling one in. It was not the size of yours, but it was a big catfish. The line broke, and my dad is standing right next to me. This is 3 years ago. He throws a line out in the water just randomly. He catches the exact same fish I had on my hook because there was my hook and the line
was still in it.
Was still in it. So in 10 minutes, we caught the same fish twice. So I'd say go back.
Yeah, no kidding. You might catch it again.
Yeah, that is true. Them catfish do migrate in them rivers, though. They move. Who knows? That fish could have been from anywhere. I mean, it could have traveled up from southern states. I mean, it's honestly hard telling,
Well,
you never know.
If you do catch it again, immediately go to the convenience store and buy a lottery ticket.
that ain't no kidding either.
Good stuff. Chad Hester, great to talk to you, man. If you come up with another good story, another fish story, which, our previous guest, Dalton Roach, both of these guys will be telling this story until they're in the grave.
I'm sure, absolutely.
I was at the nursing home, and at 90 years old, you'd be like, I was on the river, and I was fishing for catfish, and here's what happened. You're going to be doing that. You know that, Chad.
Oh, trust me. I know it. So does my family.
That's a great fish story. Chad Hester, thanks for your time today. Congratulations.
Hey, I appreciate it.
All right, you take care of yourself. We appreciate that. Yep. Good stuff.
Yep, good one.
What a good guy, man. What a good guy.
Karma. Fisherman's karma.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Gotta love a good fish story.
And he was afraid, and he put it back, and it still got great pictures of it, and he's going to get it mounted on his wall. That's fantastic.
So would you have tried to get it to Cabela's or Bass Pro?
I don't know that ever would have crossed my mind. Yeah. I just wouldn't have thought of that. I would have wondered if it was a record of some sort. I'd have been more likely to keep it, hoping it was some sort of a record. He's clearly knowledgeable enough in that area to realize it was still a blue cat, and it didn't approach 100 pounds, so it was no way it was going to be a record. So good for him. He made a good call.
It will be someday.
Yes.
So, yeah. A random thought, and I don't know the answer to it. Andy Griffith.
The fish in hole?
No, not the song, mm-hmm. but the fish. The one that was elusive to everybody that tried to catch him. Was it Walter? They named the fish in the show. Don't Google it. I just want to know if you knew. We'll have that next week
on
the show.
I'm not that old, Bo.
Hey.
Oh, boy. Yeah, got you there.
Yeah, you are.
He is old enough to know that. Yeah, we all watched Andy Griffith growing up. Come on.
Say
give
it's
me
Walter.
A break.
You don't remember that?
I do remember the story, but I don't remember the name of the fish.
Okay. All right.
Next week, something to look forward to.
Yeah, exactly.
On Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
All right, that's going to wrap it up.
Yeah. Hey, for Bo Matthews, Carl Middleman, I'm Mark Cox. Have a great week. We'll see you on the next edition of Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
You and me go fishing in the dark, lying on our backs and counting the stars where the cool grass grows. Down by the river in the full moonlight, we'll be falling in love in the middle of the night, just moving slow.
Get more at 971talk.com.